Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, board member for Pardes. This week, Rabbi Schweiger discusses Parshat Noach. Please tell your friends about the podcast. Our listenership continues to grow through your help. And please let us know your comments about the podcast. Write us via podcasts@pardesusa.org. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as the Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
This week's parsha is Parshat Noach. I would like to examine the personality of Noach. Before we look at our parsha, we need to look at the background at the end of last week's parsha. Last week's parsha ends on a very depressing note. When we look at the beginning of the parsha, we see a world which God creates. We are at each stage of the creation. It says, and God looks at what he created, and it was good. And at the end of chapter 1, we read the summation, where it says, God looked at everything that he had did, and behold, it was very good. We spoke about this a little bit in last week's session. But when we look at the end of last week's parsha, it ends on an exactly opposite note. In chapter 6, verse 5, and God saw that the evil of man had proliferated on the earth, and all the drives and the thoughts of his heart were only evil. The parsha begins with a world that God creates, which is all good. It ends on the note of a world that man has usurped and turned into evil. And to see the depths of the problem, not only has man corrupted the earth, but man has actually impacted negatively on God. So that in chapter 6, verse 6, it says, Vayit'atzev el libo. God is saddened to his heart. When Adam and Eve first eat of the tree of knowledge, the punishment is that they have brought sadness into the world. God says to Adam, with sadness you will eat your bread. This is in chapter 3. In verse 17, God says to the woman in verse chapter 3, verse 16, with sadness you will give birth to children. And that sadness is actually penetrated to the heart of God. And the world has become such a terrible place that in chapter 6, verse 7, God says that he has no recourse but to wipe out all of his creation. But the very last verse of Parshat Bereshit, verse 8, V'noach matzachein b'nei Hashem, which I will translate as, but Noach found favor in the eyes of God. In the midst of a world which is filled with evil, there is one ray of hope, Noach. In a world filled with darkness, there is one ray of light, Noach. And it is Noach who becomes the central figure in our parsha. Our parsha begins in chapter 6, verse 9. Eile toldot Noach, which is translated usually, these are the generations of Noach. Noach, ish tzadik, Noach is a righteous man. Tamim haya bedorotav. He was perfect in his generations. Et ha-Elohim hitalech Noach. Noach walks with God. It is very interesting that before God appears and speaks to Noach, that we are given this billing, this background of who Noach is. He is described in all the superlatives. Noach, first of all, is described as being an ish, which is very often seen as being a man of stature. Tzaddik, righteous, which may have to do in his actions, in his relationship with God, in the fact that he holds himself accountable to a standard of behavior. Tamim, he is perfect, which some commentaries understand to mean perfect in his heart, in his thoughts, so that both in terms of action and thought, he is complete. There is a qualifying statement, Tamim haya bedorotav, in his generations he was perfect. And we find already in the Midrash, which Rashi quotes, two opinions. One opinion that says, why qualify this as saying in his generations? As a way of saying, had Noach lived in the time of Avraham, how much more so would he have been a righteous individual? If in the midst of such depravity, he is able to maintain a certain standard of behavior, how much more so in a framework of righteousness? But there's another opinion, which says that relative to his generation, he is righteous. But relative to Abraham, he is insignificant. He does not stand out. When the end of the verse says, Et Elohim hitalech Noach, Noach walked with God. In Parshat Bereishit, we have another figure who also walks with God. And that is in chapter 5, verse 22. Vayitalech Hanoch et Elohim, and Hanoch walked with God. And says it a second time in verse 24. Vayitalech Hanoch et Elohim, and Hanoch walked with God. But it says, Ve'inenu, but he is no longer here because God took him. And in fact, when we look at the figure of Hanoch in chapter 5, in the list of all the genealogies, it strikes our attention that almost every person who is listed in the genealogy lives approximately 900 years. Some a little bit less, some a little bit more. Hanoch is the only one who is cut off in his youth, so to speak, who lives to be only 365 years. And the explanation given in the text is because God took him, which sounds very troubling. If Hanoch is someone who walks with God, why should God cut his life short? And there is a rabbinic comment which says, yes, Hanoch walks with God, but Hanoch is a little bit like a yo-yo, who tends to walk with God, but also tends to slip away. And God, therefore, takes him when he's on a high, when he's walking with God, so that he should die as a righteous person, rather than as an evil one. The reason that I bring this up is because when Hanoch walks with God, that is very positive. But at the same time, the rabbis see that there's something missing. And therefore, you have a rabbinic comment also by Noach. The rabbis note that by Noach, it says he walks with God. Whereas by Avraham, in chapter 17, verse 1, God says to Avraham, walk before me and be perfect. And the rabbis note the difference between Noach and Avraham is that Noach is like a little child who needs to be taken by the hand, who walks with God, where God is leading him. He needs to be led the whole way. Whereas Avraham is somebody who is independent, who can set the tone, who can walk before God. Having said that, it seems to be that Noah's strength, which can also be his weakness, and we will discuss this later on, is that whatever God tells Noah to do, he follows to the T. He is a follower, a very loyal follower, devoted follower. You can count on him. Whatever you tell him to do, he will get done. But he's not an initiator. He's not somebody who will take the lead. And I would like to suggest that at this point in time, what the world needs is a Noah. If we step back a moment and see the process of the deterioration of the world, it began with Adam and Eve eating of the tree of knowledge. The motivation to eat from the tree is because they want to be godlike. They want to know good and evil. One could say they want to be the ones who determine what is good and evil. And when they make that choice, they set in motion a process which in a certain way cuts them off from God as being the source of their information. And where they now make the choices. Unfortunately, as we read in the continuation of the parsha, humanity seems to constantly be making the bad choices, to the point where they've created a world where it seems that there is no good which is left, only evil. And in the midst of this world, there is one person, Noah, who is that ray of hope, who finds favor in the eyes of God. And perhaps it is because he has the quality of looking to God to somehow direct him, show him what is good and evil. And in that way stands apart from everyone else. And when we look at our parsha, we see again and again who Noah is by a refrain. If we look at chapter 6, verse 22, it says, Vayas Noach, and Noach did. Kochol asher tziva oto Elokim, ken asa. According to all that God had commanded him to do, he did. If we look at chapter 7, verse 5, Vayas Noach, kochol asher tzivahu Hashem. Noach did according to all that God had commanded him to do. This seems to be the outstanding feature of Noach. God tells him to do something and he does it. In fact, Noach does not seem to be a man of words. Never do we find Noach speak until the very end of the parsha when he comes off the boat. He is a man of action. And his actions are to execute the will of God. If we look at his name, Noach, which means to rest, Noach is someone who perhaps can create a turning point. When he is first given his name, his father Lemech calls him Noach and says, in chapter 5, verse 29, Zeh yinachameinu mima'aseinu umeyitzvon yadeinu. This one will comfort us from the work of our hands, from the sadness of our hands, from the land which God has cursed. And there is a rabbinic comment that says that Noah's name foreshadows an invention which Noah made, the plow. Noah builds a plow, creates a plow, and facilitates the working of the land. So that Noah, in a certain sense, creates a certain turning point. In a world where the land is cursed, where there is such sadness, such difficulty in toiling the land, he has now made it easier to work the land by making a plow. But in our parsha, we see that Noah creates a turning point in creating a new reality. So let us go on in our parsha. In chapter 6, verses 11 and 12, we're told, "Vatishachet ha'aretz lefnei ha'Elohim," and the world is corrupted before God. "Vatimalei ha'aretz chamas," the world is filled with violence. And God sees the earth in verse 12, that it is corrupted, for all flesh has corrupted its way on the earth. The rabbis note that there are two different sins described here. One sin is the corruption of the earth. And the rabbis understand the corruption of the earth as referring to sexual promiscuity. A promiscuity where there has been a total breakdown in terms of any barriers, in terms of any limits of how people conduct their sexual lives. And the ultimate, which the rabbis see, is that human beings are copulating with animals. Animals have even begun copulating with other species. So that if we go back to the beginning of chapter 1 in Bereishit, when God created the world, we spoke about this last week, God created everything liminehu, according to its species. We spoke about the importance of each species being separated out, individuated. We spoke about the idea of having a world which is very much ordered. And now all of a sudden, we have a world where the structure has broken down. There is no order. There is no sense of individuality, of uniqueness. If I had to put it in slightly different language, the world is a framework of utter chaos. So that this beautiful structure which God created has totally broken down. The other sin is that the world is filled with violence. The rabbinic understanding is in terms of stealing. There is no acknowledgement of property, no acknowledgement of person. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine. Once again, there is a breakdown in the structure. It is very interesting that the rabbis note in verse 13, when God appears to Noah and says, "The end of all flesh has come before me, for the land is filled with violence, and I will destroy the earth." Ultimately, the land is punished, not for being corrupted, but for the violence. And we can perhaps get a hint to this in last week's parsha, in chapter 6, when we look at verse 2, and it speaks about the sons of God who take the daughters of man, and they take to themselves women from whoever they choose, which perhaps describes the violence of women being taken by men without having a say in the matter. This is the world in which Noah lives. And when God speaks to Noah, God gives him very, very detailed instructions about the ark which he's about to build. In this ark, Noah and his family and representatives of all the creatures on the earth will come in. And one can raise a very simple question. If God is interested in destroying the world, but would like to maintain the seeds for a new world, why is it necessary to have Noah build this boat? Why can't God simply save Noah and his family and the various creatures in the midst of all the destruction? If God is all-powerful, why does God need Noah to build a boat? And I would like to suggest three explanations. The first explanation: if Noah builds a boat, this will not happen overnight. It will take time. And especially when we look at the dimensions, it is a huge boat. It will take time to be able to gather the animals. It will take time to be able to collect the food. There is a rabbinic tradition that it may have taken even 120 years. For at the moment when God decreed in chapter 6, verse 3, that the days of humanity are limited, it will be 120 years. It may be at that point that God actually spoke to Noah. And why is that fact important? Well, if Noah is building the boat, this will be something which is visible to the people around him. And people will come up to Noah and ask him, "Noah, why are you building a boat?" And Noah's response will be, "There's going to be a flood." Why is there going to be a flood? Because God is fed up with the world. There is too much evil. Put differently, by Noah building a boat, it presents a final opportunity for the world to change, for people to do tshuva. By seeing Noah build the boat, people may be shaken up and perhaps will preclude the catastrophe which is about to come. So that God is showing Noah a very important theological point, namely, that God is not interested in destroying the world without giving the world a final opportunity to change. By having him build a boat, this may be the final chance for the world to take a serious look at themselves and perhaps prevent the catastrophe that's about to come. Second reason, put in very trite terms, God helps those that help themselves. If Noah is going to be saved, it can't be because God is doing it. He has to be able to create the framework that will deliver him. Which is an important message of the need for people to have to act and not to place everything in God's hands. And this is a theme which we see later on as well. When the Jewish people are at the Red Sea, and the Egyptians are chasing them from behind, Moses at a certain point says to the people, "Don't be afraid. God will save you." But God says to Moses, "Tell the people to walk into the sea." The people have to be ready to take the initial step to bring about their salvation. and God will make it into a reality. But there is a third consideration. And the third consideration is, when Noah builds the ark, Noah is creating the microcosm of the new world to be. If the original world is created by God, the new world will be created through a partnership between God and man. God gives Noah the instructions, but Noah has to create the structure. And I would like to note one thing in terms of this idea. In chapter 6, verses 19 and 20, when God tells Noah about the animals that he needs to bring, he tells them to bring two of each species, male and female. And then in verse 20 he says, from the birds according to their species, from the animals according to their species, from all the creatures according to their species, on this boat, God is trying to create a framework, recreate a framework, where each species will be maintained and distinct. Hence, when we look at one of the instructions that Noah is given, he is told in verse 14, make to you a boat, kinim. What is kinim? Rooms, separations you shall make on this boat, nests. And hence the rabbis say that every couple was given their own room. Furthermore, the rabbis in a midrash say that when the animals came to Noah, they would not be allowed to enter if they had been corrupt in their sexual practices. Only animals that had been faithful to their species were allowed to go on the boat. So that the boat is built in such a way that it makes it clear to each species that they have to maintain their uniqueness. It's even interesting to note that when Noah and his sons and their wives come on the boat, there is a separation that's made between the men and the women. And this can be seen in chapter 7, verse 13. It says, on that very day Noah came, Shem, Ham, and Yafet, and the wife of Noah, and the three wives of his sons entered the boat. And by making that separation, the rabbis understand that for the duration of time that they were on the boat, they did not live as husband and wife, but lived separately, to perhaps appreciate their uniqueness as individuals. It is only when they leave the boat that they're told to leave as couples. Before they can become a couple, they have to appreciate who they are as individuals. One more note. In chapter 6, verse 16, Noah is told to build a tzohar, which is generally understood to mean a window. But in fact, later on, there is a different word which is used for a window, and that is chalon. So that when Noah sends out the raven and the dove, we're told in chapter 7, for example, in verse 6, And Noach opened the chalon which he had made and sends out the raven. So what is a tzohar? It seems to be that the word tzohar is related to the word zohar, which means luster. Tzohar related to the word tzahorayim, which means afternoon. And hence the rabbis see that the tzohar is a medium of light. And there are two opinions that appear in the Midrash. One opinion says that it was a window for letting in light. And a second opinion says that it was a precious stone which generated light. And I would like to work with the second opinion. Because if I see the ark as being a self-contained framework, which is now creating, as I said earlier, the microcosm for the new world to be. So I should be able to have all of the elements necessary to sustain this framework. And hence the Tzohar is a self-generating source of light on this framework. So that when Noach builds the ark, Noach is becoming a partner with God in creating not only the structure, but filling that structure. And I would also add sustaining that structure. According to the rabbinic understanding, Noach is on the boat for a full year. Although the rains last only for 40 days and 40 nights, the world does not come back to a state where it is fit to be inhabited until a full year has passed. When I think about this, it is extremely difficult for me to imagine what it is to be cooped up for a whole year in a very limited framework, together with all types of different creatures. And there are all kinds of rabbinic midrashim which speak about the difficulties that Noach has on the boat when he has to feed the animals. If one thinks about children, babies who wake up in the middle of the night, if one thinks about children who have to be fed, who are very fussy in particular, and what they eat. Imagine what it's like to have to deal with the whole spectrum of animals that you have to take care of. And I would say that this is a very real learning experience for Noach. Not only does Noach become a partner with God in building this boat, in populating the boat, but he becomes a partner in terms of having to sustain it, in terms of nurturing it, in learning what it is to give of himself. Perhaps we could say in being a man of chesed. I would like to end on the following note. I mentioned earlier that Noach is not Avraham. When God tells Avraham that he's about to destroy the city of stone, Avraham argues with God. When God tells Noach he's about to destroy the world, Noach doesn't argue. I mentioned earlier that when Noach builds the boat, it's an opportunity to perhaps get a message across to the world at large. But we never have Noach or any description of Noach speaking to the people around him. With Avraham, we're told he calls out in the name of God. We never see that by Noach. Noach is a righteous man, but he seems to have created a bubble around him. The ark is a bubble. But in the ark, Noach has to now include all the creatures of the world. And perhaps this is an opportunity for Noach to go outside of himself, to learn what it is to not just be focused on his relationship with God, but to see his role as being somebody who needs to impact on the world around him. I mentioned earlier that at this point in time, the world needs somebody who perhaps is willing to listen to the word of God, who's willing to follow instructions, who doesn't necessarily think so much for himself, is not so independent, but is able to simply hold himself accountable to a standard. Noach saves the world. Noach presents hope for creating a new world. A new world which perhaps will function much better because people have now become involved in shaping it. Because people perhaps have learned that they need to take responsibility for it. Noach succeeds because in the aftermath of the flood, God takes an oath that he will never again destroy the world. Perhaps we need to look at the story and see how important it is for people to have to take responsibility for the world, for the creatures around them. How on the one hand, I hold myself accountable to a standard, but on the other hand, I have to be able to somehow go outside of myself and to not just put myself into a bubble, but to be able to now bring that standard to the world around me. On the one hand, I have to be able to focus on who I am and take responsibility for my actions. But on the other hand, I have to also look at the world around me. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your email via podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.